Burslem Reel 2, do you think that by the time you'd finished your training at Waddington that you were thoroughly trained for the duties you had later to carry out in France?
As far as flying's concerned, I think I was. But I had never done any firing from the air. And when I was sent to the air gunnery school at Marsk, I was sent out with a draft of 20 pilots, because the pilots on the DH-9s were needed so badly at that time that it was considered not necessary for us to do any firing, and we went straight out to.
Now, when you went to France, you joined number 218,
yes,
squadron at Guines,
yes,
near Calais.
Yes.
That had been a former naval squadron, hadn't
yes,
it?
Yes, number 18, yes. Naval squadron.
Was it very apparent from its composition and behaviour that it had been a naval squadron and not a military one?
Oh, yes. The officer commanding was an ex-RNAS man, and the three flight commanders and some of the pilots were ex-naval, and the mechanics were all ex-naval, so it was, and they had a lot of naval customs, that the anteroom was the wardroom, and the huts had cabins in them, and whenever we went to Calais, we went ashore.
Apart from these naval traditions, which remained with the squadron after it became a part of the Royal Air Force, were there any other characteristics that you noticed in particular when you first went out to join them?
Yes, the variety of uniforms. We had about 10 different kinds. We had naval blue and naval khaki, and the general service khaki that ex-infantry officers wore, and then there was our RFC split air tunics, and RAF khaki, and the RAF Hungarian blue that was coming in at that time.
This RAF Hungarian blue, why did it acquire that name?
Well, we heard at that time that the mills in Yorkshire had so much wool of that colour in their warehouses that they had made for the Hungarian army, and hadn't been able to deliver it for the war, so somebody at Whitehall got the idea that it would be a good job to use it up on the new service that was coming in.
So that's how the RAF got its blue, as
yes,
far as you knew.
Yes, and a lot of it caused a lot of ridicule at the time, because people thought that it was a comic opera style of a uniform, and a lot of letters to the press appeared about that, about the things.
Did the fact that this squadron which you joined was composed of both naval and military flyers create any particular problems or rivalries?
Oh, we got on very well, but there was a lot of good-natured jibbing between the two services, and especially on our part when we heard of a young naval officer coming back from a flight over the coast and putting down on his logbook, saw a seagull flying backwards.
Did the fact that this mainly naval squadron had now become, legally at least, a part of the Royal Air Force, did that fact seem to influence their way of behaving very much, bearing in mind that they were now part of a new and third service?
I think they regretted leaving the Navy, and we felt that they rather resented the new service. I think they preferred to have been in the Navy.
What kind of bombing operations was 218 Squadron carrying out?
218 was part of the 5th Group, Royal Air Force, working with the Navy. And they made patrols over the north coast of Belgium, off the coasts of Belgium and northern France, and they also bombed Bruges, Zeebrugge, and Ostend, where the Germans had a lot of submarine bases, and we bombed them to try and deter them from coming out of those bases.
With what sort of frequency were you carrying out these bombing operations?
218 did one raid a day, usually in the afternoon.
Could you describe for me what the routine was for these raids, how they were organized and carried out?
Well, it depended on the number of machines that were fit to fly. And usually there were two flights, and mixed up of all the different flights. We didn't just go into A, B, and C flights. We just had two formations of a leader, and then two on his either side, and then three on the back, making six machines in all. And we took off from Gines, and we flew along the coast to whatever target of the day it was supposed to be. And when we were over the target, we were at 15,000 feet, and we got over the target area, the docks, and dropped our bombs.
What was the drill, actually, once you'd got over the target?
We dropped our bombs and got away from there as quickly as possible.
How intense was German air activity at this time?
It was quite intense. When we crossed over the enemy lines at Newport, we came under very intense fire. And then over the target, it seemed to increase a little bit more. And
this was fire from German airplanes?
No, from the ground. Archie, anti-aircraft, which we called Archie.
Yes. I was thinking particularly of German air service.
No, we scarcely ever saw a German when we were over our target.
Yes.
But there was one occasion when we had dropped our bombs and we were on our way home, and we were still over the land and not over the North Sea. And I saw the airplanes in front of me weaving all over the place, so I started to weave too. And then eventually we got back into formation and went back to our base and landed. And when we were making out our reports, the leader of the formation that led my formation asked who was on the outside left in the rear of the formation, and I said I was. And he said, "Did you see that Hun on your tail?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, there was one, and you would have been cold meat if I hadn't turned and chased him off." So I turned to my observer and said, "What, did you see that, hun?" He said, "No." I said, "Why?" And he said, "I was being sick in my cockpit." And I said, you report ill. Mm-hmm. And I never flew with him again.
Were there other occasions in which you came under fire from German airplanes?
No, I think that's the only.
Did 218 Squadron have any other duties apart from general reconnaissance and bombing while you were with them?
Well, during the last push that started on the 28th of September 1918, we moved to Dunkirk, nearer the lines, and intensified our air raids. But instead of raiding the submarine bases, we raided specified railway points, railway stations, to prevent the Germans bringing up their ammunition and reserves. And on the Allied troops advanced so fast and so far, and the weather wasn't very good. It was on the 30th of September, it rained all day, and continued on the 1st of October. And the troops were grounded. They couldn't advance, and supplies couldn't be brought up to them. And our squadron was given the job to drop food for them into their advanced positions. We were given a map reference, told where they were, and we were told to go and drop bags of bully beef.
These food drops which you carried out, or this one food drop which you carried out, what were the mechanics of carrying and dropping food?
Well, the observer had three sandbags filled with bully beef, about 50 tins of bully beef to one sandbag. And he just, when we had come to the destination, he just lifted them over. The airplane was down at about 100 feet, and the ground was all muddy. And so he just lifted them out and dropped them. There was no parachute attached to them at all.
So they were actually carried in the observer's cockpit?
Cockpit, yes.
Had you carried out this food drop as a squadron?
Yes, the two formations took off and flew to the objective and dropped their food. But my airplane wouldn't start that morning, and so they took off without me. When they were coming back, my engine started, and I went up to the CO and asked him whether I should scrub out my food drop, or go on the raid, the next raid that was to be carried out shortly. And he told me to go on my food drop, so I went by myself. I got to the formation and saw the Belgian soldiers in their blue uniforms, who seemed to expect me, so I came down about 100 feet and did a series of figure of eights. And when we were over the troops, my observer dropped the sandbags. And I got fooled with all those figure of eights, confused my sense of direction, and I just flew into the on the direction that I thought was the way home. I would have got to the North Sea. I was expecting to see the North Sea, and then all I had to do was to turn left until we got to Dunkirk. But I was flying and flying, and no North Sea appeared. And then I remembered the compass, and I looked at it and saw that I had been flying southeast, and it was taking me further and further into enemy territory. So I flew on a course northwest, and as I didn't see the North